We are back here at Late Night Baseball, talking baseball each and every week. But more importantly, spring training is back. I feel it in the air. I feel it in my bones. Parker, I was watching MLB Network today and all the footage out of spring training, and I am the happiest I could ever be right now in this moment.
Football's over. Baseball is actually back. I know I said it was back last week. It's actually back. We're getting to watch MLB Network coverage of baseball that's currently taking place in Arizona and Florida. Our trip's booked to Arizona. Games start in a few days. We're so back.
It is just, you get to this time of the year and there is just something about it that I can't explain. Like, I could be in 20 degree weather here in Chicago getting inches of snow like we are today, and I feel warm as all get out because we've been waiting for this. The storylines are coming. The players are here. We're hearing about how everyone's in the best shape of their life like we do every year. And yeah. and it all starts fresh. It all starts over. And it's like, you find me sitting here like a kid watching MLB Network like I've never seen baseball before. Like, it's insane.
Absolutely. I always, whatever you say, in the best shape of their life, I always think back to, like, what was it, 34, 35, 36 year old Josh Donaldson reporting to Yankees camp, and John Heyman comes out, he's like, Josh Donaldson says he's in the best shape of his entire life. This dude's been playing baseball. He's won an MVP before. But yeah, right now, 35-year-old Josh Donaldson, he's in the best shape of his life. I'm so excited, dude. I could not be more excited for spring training. It is different for baseball than I think other teams. I think mostly because they play televised games during spring training. But like, think about, like, football training camp starts up. You're like, oh, cool, I got to play my fantasy draft. You know, all that type of stuff happens. I don't think anybody gives you this, like, hope springs eternal feeling like seeing your favorite players suiting up in basketball shorts and a team shirt and just playing catch on a baseball field. Maybe it's because a lot of us live in cold areas, and, like, I mean, I don't, but a lot of people live in cold areas and seeing this, like, warm weather, my baseball team's getting ready. Maybe that's what it is, but man, nothing like spring training.
Not a thing. And there's a lot to be excited about here in 2025. This season's going to be one for the ages. We're pretty confident in that. And today what we're doing is we're continuing our division previews, and we're diving deep into the AL West. Before we do, though, Parker, there's still some movement going on in the market, right? Mm-hmm. There's some things that still need to happen. We have some names out there. We're hearing things today. And so the news out of the free agent market / trade market today is that there is some progress on Alex Bregman. It looks like he's going to be going to either the Red Sox, Tigers, or Cubs. It looks like it's narrowed it down to a three-team race. Meanwhile, Parker, Nolan Arenado trade talks are starting up again. The Yankees seem heavily involved. The Red Sox seem to have him as a fallback option if they don't get Bregman. What do you make of all this, especially as a Red Sox guy?
So I'm going to make this all about the Red Sox because I truly believe that they are the linchpin in both of these potential moves. And what do I mean by that? Okay, so I think that Alex Bregman knows that his best OPS in any of those ballparks is in Fenway Park. And I think he wants to bank balls off of the monster. He has over 1,000 OPS there. He's actually the best hitter in the history of Fenway Park with people with more than like 20 games played there or something like that, which is obviously a tiny sample size. But he's had success there, and this is baseball. We're superstitious. Can I ask you, who do you know off the top of your head who reported this information? Because it's new information to me. We talked about this before the pod. I've been very busy today. Hadn't had a chance to catch up on all the baseball news.
Let me pull it up for you. So
I'll take John Heyman for $600, Alex.
No. So okay. We got ESPN's Buster Olney is the one that reported that it's going to be Red Sox, Cubs, or Tigers for Bregman.
Okay. And what about the Yankees rumor for Arenado?
So that one may be Heyman. Let's look, shall we?
Because so okay, that so one, here's
ooh,
my
no. That is MLB.com's John Denton and Mark Feinsand of MLB.com.
Okay. All right. Well, I thought this was a Scott Boras plant to try to drive interest. or pressure the Red Sox to make a decision, because here's the deal. What I think is going to play out is Alex Bregman is going to make his decision, and hours later, the Arenado sweepstakes will conclude as well, because I think that they're both holding each other's market up. Both, all the teams that want Bregman would be somewhat okay with Arenado. And if Bregman decides to go to a place that isn't Boston, Massachusetts, I think the Red Sox immediately move to make Arenado a Red Sox. And personally, I think that there's no better way to drive interest from the Sox than to mention the Yankees in the same sentence.
That is true. I think the wrinkle in this, though, is if you look at those three teams, Red Sox, Cubs, Tigers, I think that's the case with the Red Sox. I do not see a scenario where the Cubs or the Tigers pivot to Arenado. I don't think they want to trade. They don't want to take the cost. They're not going to give up the prospects. It's really just kind of a one-team scenario here.
Yes, absolutely. So I think if the Red Sox up the offer to comparable, if not, like, I think he would take less money to go to Boston. I genuinely think it's that cut and dry, but I don't think the Sox have offered more than 3 years. I think that they do not want to pigeonhole Marcelo Meyer into a situation where he has nowhere to go, because right now we have Trevor Story under contract for 3 more years. Rafael Devers is under contract until 2085, and then the open hole at second base is looking like it's going to be filled by either Vaughn Grissom or Christian Campbell, and everybody hopes that that turns into a permanent scenario. So if you're gonna be if Bregman does sign with the Red Sox, I think he signs long term, and the Red Sox then can use Marcelo Meyer as a trade piece, but he doesn't have a ton of value. It's a lot of injury history. This is a murky situation.
I mean, honestly, it puts them in a good spot. I mean, if they're picking up Alex Bregman, the way I see it is you're putting Bregman at third, you're having Rafi play DH, and then you're hopefully trying to get rid of Yoshida. They've been trying to all offseason. That's going to be hard, but I would like to think they could still try to get rid of him.
Yeah, I think so too. That's definitely the whale contract on this Red Sox roster. That's the one that everybody could get rid of one dude, if one guy could go away, the Red Sox front office is probably trying to get rid of Masataka Yoshida. He's been okay and not really worth the contract, especially not when you factor in the fact the Red Sox paid like a $15 million posting fee on top of it. So it's like, what's really going on? How can we get rid of this guy? At this point, it would be a salary dump. Take a lottery ticket on someone and then eat half the salary if they were to trade him.
I'm going to interrupt you right now and share with you that Nick Pivetta agrees to a 4-year, $55 million deal with the San Diego Padres.
Hey, Red Sox get the pick. Okay, boom, let's go. Red Sox get the compensation pick. Good, they offered him the QO.
That's awesome. That's
from downtown, so Craig Breslow with the pick.
Those comp picks, baby. I'm telling you, they matter. Don't let anyone tell you they don't matter. And
they do.
That's a solid move for the Padres purely because they just needed to fortify that rotation big time.
4 years. Okay, Nick Pivetta. I'm looking at it now 13 minutes ago before we even started recording, actually. Nick Pivetta's deal with the Padres has opt-outs after years 2 and 3. The deal will pay him $3 million signing bonus and a $1 million salary in 25. Oh, wait a minute. Have you seen this? $1 million in 2025, $19 million in 26, $14 million in 27, and $18 million in 28.
That is the weirdest structure I've ever seen. Ladies and gentlemen, when you start getting to the free agent, this deep in the free agent season, you're talking end of February, early March, you see some crazy shit.
Do you know what this says to me? This says to me the Padres will be fire sailing at the deadline. This looks like a desire to keep him around long term while also not really increasing this year's payroll. And at the deadline, we might see Tatis move, man. Like, dude, they have already tried to offload so much payroll. Maybe it is, but they've been trying to offload salary. And this type of deal where you get $1 million in 2025 and $19 million in 2026, that screams we're trying to get rid of payroll and not increase salary.
I mean, folks, if you didn't listen to our NL West preview, you and I, we talked about this. We talked about
it's the now outdated.
A turning point. No, it's not. Go back, folks. Go to YouTube. Check it twice. But this is what we talked about. The Padres being at a crossroads, and this is very likely that if they stumble out of the gates this year, a fire sale is very possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this actually plays directly to what we talked about, where we said they're kind of just pitching away from being a pretty good team. They have a good roster. It's an expensive roster, and they don't love that it's expensive. But this just makes them better. I genuinely think that Nick Pivetta is. I'm not going to come out and say he's like a Cy Young contender or anything like that, but he's a solid number 4 or 5 starter in their rotation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, a kudos to the Padres. They're the most expensive team of used to be shortstops. All right.
Absolutely.
So one thing I want to do before we dive into the AL West, Parker, is I'm going to go back to the Red Sox again. We're having a Red Sox show here. The Red Sox, seemingly, it's the year of the documentary for the Red Sox, because the Red Sox are now releasing April 8th on Netflix what is supposed to be a really awesome documentary. It's called The Clubhouse. It's called The Clubhouse Following the Red Sox and for 2025. And it's the best way to explain it is it's kind of like Hard Knocks for baseball, and I couldn't be more excited about it.
Hard Knocks, Formula One Drive to Survive, Full Swing, all of these sports style documentaries that have been coming out, these like in season in the clubhouse. I love it. So I've been following the project at least tangentially for the last year. I remember when it was announced, it was right before the season in 2024. The Netflix crew was there through, I think they were there through like August, maybe a little bit past the All-Star break in 2025. Sox ended up being 81-81. So I don't think it's going to be potentially the most thrilling documentary. If they'd won the World Series, it'd probably be awesome. But no, I'm excited for sure. There was a clip released today. It was a little over a minute, almost a minute and a half, of Tristan Casas and a couple sit downs that he had with the Netflix crew. And personally, if you had to pick a main character of this documentary, I think Tristan Casas is probably going to be the guy. He spent a lot of time during the season injured and with a bunch of free time. So prime target for any interviews, and he's probably definitely the most polarizing and maybe the most interesting personality on the Sox right now.
Well, and excuse me, they showed a clip where, and we may be talking about the same clip, but the access they get clearly for this documentary is awesome. I mean, they're showing Tristan Casas going out to first base after a half inning, just swearing at himself, beating the shit out of himself, and it is
he's
so
only
raw,
throwing
so
90
real.
Man,
yeah, like it's so raw. And this is the sort of stuff that when we talk about, and we've talked about it often, getting people into the game, expanding the game's reach, bringing the game to life, engaging, you know, younger fans, this is it. They're doing the right thing.
I especially when you talk about how Casas is a young, interesting ball player on a club that's high profile like the Red Sox. Big fan of the idea of doing this. I'm happy the Red Sox were the ones doing it. I'd be watching every second if it was any team in Major League Baseball for sure. Hey, maybe we get lucky. Excuse me. I don't know if this is going to be like a yearly thing, like Hard Knocks, but what if they get in on this whole A's situation in the next few years while they are relocating and stuff like that? How cool would that be? Just this level of access is cool, but like, let's pick a team that really makes a compelling story.
That would be awesome. I'm very eager to see what happens after this doc with the Red Sox. Hopefully we get a lot more, which would be really awesome. Speaking of the A's, let's spend the rest of our time this evening, Parker, going into the AL West, which to me is one of the most interesting divisions in baseball this year, because you can draw it up a million and one different ways. Parker, when you look at the AL West, we'll get into each team individually as we have been doing, but What do you make of the AL West in 2025?
Oh, a lot of uncertainty. And I know that's like such a blanket statement you can add to anybody. But to me, the AL West is very, like, there's a lot that could go. This could be one of the more competitive divisions in baseball. It's a very talent heavy division. That also is a very unproven division, which is weird to say because a very recent, you know, 2 years ago, the World Series champion came out of this division. And seemingly every year we have very, very good playoff runs from this division. But recent events in recent years have led me to doubt the probability of the Rangers running away with the division like they probably should be, considering how recently they won the World Series, or the Astros, who made seven consecutive ALCSs and for seemingly are falling off the in progress of falling off the face of the planet. And then you talk about a team like the Mariners. If they just sign somebody who can hold a baseball bat, maybe they win the division because they have incredible pitching. Like, there's more teams. I'm not going to list every team and give a point on each, but genuinely it's an interesting situation to find yourself in when you're, if you're watching AL West baseball this year.
It is the highs are high potentially and the lows are low, and the variability of success and failure is quite wide with, I think, every one of these teams. And what's interesting is you look at each of these teams, and if you look at where they're at right now in their franchise and what they're dealing with, they're all in very different stages, doing a lot of different things. Some acting a little bit crazy. Maybe the Angels. We'll talk about it. But I do want to actually, no, let's just start there. It's alphabetical order anyway. We usually go alphabetical order. This team we're probably going to spend the most time on. You're sporting the A's, the Angels hat today. Let's talk about the Angels. We're going to go alphabetical order here and start with LA. So the Angels, Parker, I don't really know how to start this conversation other than to say Perry Manassian has confused me since taking over as the head of baseball ops for the Angels, because they have made seemingly no investments in their player development. They've developed no prospects. They keep trading for absolutely kind of B-level, C-level players and trying to put somebody together. I mean, this offseason, they basically put together a 2019 All-Star team, a team of 2019 All-Stars. Like, I can't figure it out. Help me understand. Explain it to me like I'm five, please.
Okay, so let's look at what's going on with the Angels roster right now. I'm going to run down the starter listed on the depth chart on FanGraphs real quick, and just we'll talk about whether or not I'm optimistic about these players. Logan Ohapi, that's a good place to start. I mean, I think I'm one of the optimists as it pertains to Logan Ohapi. I think he's going to be a good big league catcher. I think his ceiling is maybe a Jose Trevino. Maybe not offensively. It's a bad comp offensively. Yeah, no, I think he's going to be a good defensive catcher with more offensive upside than a Jose Trevino. Correct. I like Logan Ohapi. First base, Nolan Schanuel. Jury's still out. I don't know. You didn't let the guy play minor league baseball. He would still be a triple-A player in most teams' organizations, and he's hitting .255 as a forced big leaguer. So, okay, here we go. There we go. J.D. Davis, is he on the 2025 Angels? JD Davis.
He is. He's a minor league deal with a non-roster invite.
All right. Hey, that's good. Okay. So JD Davis is at spring training with the Angels. He's appearing on the FanGraphs depth chart. So here we go. Okay. Now let's go a little deeper. Luis Renjifo is going to be playing second base. Okay. Dude can't hit, but like plays pretty good defense. All right. Zach Neto, slick defensive shortstop, love the guy, but he's hurt along with Renjifo. So who's going to play any middle infield position? I'll tell you who, Anthony. They just signed Tim Anderson, who's a minor league baseball player at this point. He's going to be playing shortstop for the Angels most likely on opening day. Okay, cool. Tim Anderson hit .259 in 63 plate appearances last year. I guess we're rolling with him. Now, good news is there's a bastion of health playing third base for the Angels. Wait, no, there isn't, because Anthony Rendon is one of the biggest disappointments in Major League Baseball contract writing history. If we look at the list of FanGraphs WAR leaders over the last 5 years or four seasons, so since this contract was signed with the Angels in 2020. Well, we talked about this beforehand, so it's not really going to be a surprise to you. Anthony Rendon has 3.8 F-WAR.
To clarify, you're saying since 2020 combined.
In 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023, and 2024, four and a half seasons of Major League Baseball. Anthony Rendon has posted 3.8 total F war in that time, which puts you in elite company with guys like Robbie Grossman, who played for six teams during that time. Nick Ahmed, who played for four teams during that time. Gary Sanchez has played for five teams during that time. What are we? Santiago Espinal has 0.6 more war in the last 5 years than Anthony Rendon. I mean, honestly, I don't know how Angels fans can't be excited, because when you have a guy who is right up there with the elite tier of player with war numbers in the last 5 years, like the likes of Jacob Stallings, how can you not be excited about the third base position for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, California?
I don't know. Listen, I think you're getting way too ahead of yourself, because guess what? They just brought in another bastion of health. Oh, wait, no. Yoan Moncada to play third base in his stead. So
exactly.
Like, I just don't quite understand, because this is exactly what I'm talking about. Like, there's no direction. And we look at this team, and I love that you broke down everything like that, because their lineup is going to leave more to be desired. They got Jorge Soler. That's a solid pickup. Don't get me wrong.
That is, yeah.
Power bat. I dig that.
And they still have Taylor Ward in right field. And Mike Trout presumably is going to play baseball this year.
You would think. And I think, and I love Travis d'Arnaud as a backup catcher, maybe splitting time like 60-40 with Ohtani.
They have two catchers that would start 100 games on any other team.
Here's the problem. The problem is, I don't know that all these pieces fit together perfectly, and I don't know how much thought was put into creating this roster. And mind you, and a lot of this is because of Rendon, they're spending a projected $202 million on this roster next year. This year. This roster.
Yeah, a quarter of that is Trout. Not really. Not actually, but like a solid amount of that is Trout, which Trout's worth every penny. I genuinely think if he's on the field, he's still a top five player in baseball. But like, when you look at, and I still have the depth chart pulled up, when you look at a team that leans so heavily on guys that just cannot stay healthy, it's super, it's just hard to put much wait on the fact that you think they're going to win baseball games.
Yeah, I mean, I will say it's not all doom and gloom. Is there a scenario where this team can do better than last year and win more than 63 games? Absolutely.
I agree. Mean,
you add a guy on a 1-year $10 million deal like a Kenley Jensen. Okay.
Yeah.
Or Kenley Jansen.
Yeah, that just happened, by the way, since our last recording. Good. Yeah. I mean, Kenley Jansen's going to have, he's going to have days where he can't go out because of his back. That's fine. Sure. You're not going to be in many save situations anyway, most likely.
That's
so okay. Good.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, we bring up Kenley Jansen. We can talk a little bit about their pitching, because it is both encouraging and also what the fuck are we doing? Because when we look at the starting rotation headed up by a guy like Yusei Kikuchi, 169 innings pitched last season. We got Tyler Anderson, 169 innings pitched last season. Both of those guys are going to have four ERAs this year, though. So it's like, yeah, they're going to post, but they're going to let runs score, and you don't have the capability of scoring runs. Kyle Hendricks is on this team. He had a 5 ERA last season. Reed Detmers, personally, I'm one of the guys that thinks he has a bunch of upside. Still really hasn't shown it. More than a 4 ERA. Absolutely nobody on this team is going to have lower than a 4 ERA if they're starting baseball games for this team.
I mean, yeah, but I tend to agree with the latter in that it's kind of more of a disaster, because if you're saying Kikuchi's your ace, Kikuchi really should be your number three. Like, he just should. He's not going to shove. He's not going to throw heat. He's not going to trick you, but he's going to give you 170 innings and give you around a 4 ERA. Like, that is a barometer for where this team's at, if Kikuchi is your ace, right? So I just, I don't think it's enough. And I think of all these teams in this division, the most question marks right now sit with the Angels. I could see this being a train wreck very quickly.
Oh, yeah. I think that a month and a half into the season, we're going to be like, oh, well, look at that. They're in last. That's fucking crazy. When you look at the money that guys like Jack Flaherty and Nick Pivetta signed for this offseason, if they were the type of team that is taking flyers on players like a Tim Anderson, like a Yoan Moncada, because you don't just sign both Tim Anderson and Yoan Moncada as fill-ins. You sign them, those two specifically, because you think we've seen that there's at least potential, if not concrete upside to these guys. So let's see if they can reclaim some of that playing in warm weather, playing, you know, whatever. Maybe LA does something for them. But if you're in on guys like that, how aren't you in on a guy like Jack Flaherty when he signed for peanuts? How are you not in on a guy like Nick Pivetta, who clearly wanted to play in Southern California this, or just really wanted to play baseball, period? Like, I don't really get it. I guess maybe Nick Pivetta doesn't make much sense because he was a QO guy and you don't want to give up a pick. So maybe that, but I don't know. It feels like they weren't. What kind of an offseason is this?
I don't know. I chalk it up to a poor player development system. That's notoriously the case. This is not breaking news. And a poor allocation of resources, really. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
What year was it that they drafted all pitchers?
Every year.
What was the last time we saw one of those guys pan out? They still have Ben Joyce, who looks to be like their guy in the bullpen. And
I'll tell you this. The last one to work out, which hasn't really worked out yet, is Reed Detmers.
Reed Detmers. And then I guess you could say Red Sox just signed him. Pablo Sandoval.
I mean, that's what I'm saying is it comes down to the development piece, the lack of development. And you talked about hitters, you know, seeing something in Tim Anderson and Moncada and saying, hey, let's bring him over and work with them. I don't trust them to do that. Like, I just don't. So I've never seen a hitter go to the L.A. and turn his career around. That's not a thing that happens.
Definitely not.
At least not this side of L.A.
No. And especially not when you're already, like, you have to think that these are human beings. Their coaches and their development staff are human beings with finite amount of time. And to me, if it comes down to trying to work with, you know, Tim Anderson in the cage or working with a Nolan Shanuel, I'm picking Shanuel. Like,
yes,
I want to spend more time in the cage with that guy working out the kinks because, I mean, Tim Anderson, you know what's weird is the other day I was super excited about baseball season and I was looking for something to watch. So I watched all the highlights from WBC 2023, Team USA. Tim Anderson was really good in that WBC.
Sure was. It was his last hurrah. And I'll tell you what,
it was.
That was the year for a Sox fan. We were like, oh man, Tim just got back from this awesome WBC performance. He's going to have a great season. Immediately tanked in the regular season. Like, immediately. It was like a different guy.
He was the worst player in baseball that season, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Wow.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so needless to say, in summary, WTF Angels. Anyway.
Yeah. I don't really have much else on these guys, man. I could talk forever about the Anthony Rendon issues and how he's just, to me, I don't like him. Like, if, as a person, I feel like there's something going on. I'm sure he's a fine father and husband and everything like that. But, like, I don't know. You grab a fan by the jersey or you make comments. You can't exist in a clubhouse full of competitors and make comments about, like, whether or not you like the game of baseball. Like, it's weird. It's weird decisions.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there there with the Angels this year. Let's move over to a team that is, I think we both agree, in a state of potential decline, and that is the Houston Astros. Now, Parker, you know I've been banging the drum for a couple seasons now, like, oh, these guys are going to fall off a cliff. It's going to happen. And I'll tell you what, this offseason has solidified for me that this may be the season where we see a substantial decline for the Astros.
What, Jose Altuve in left field's not doing it for you? Because that's what it looks like they're moving towards.
No, no. You know what's not doing it for me? Let's assume for a second Altuve's not going to play left field. Okay, let's look at that outfield for a second. That outfield, folks, left to right. Ben Gamel, Jake Myers, Chaz McCormick. Ladies and gentlemen, I am here to tell you this may be the worst outfield in baseball.
Yeah, which is weird because oddly enough, the Angels have a really good one. Like, Angels have a pretty good outfield. Ben Gamel. Wow. I wonder what his war since 2020 is. I probably should have said his name earlier. And then Jake Myers and Chaz McCormick. Isak Paredes is a fucking liability, man, at third base. Jose Altuve also.
Paredes is going to hit a lot of homers in the Crawford boxes. Bank on that. He won't catch the ball at third, but he'll hit homers.
No, he won't catch the ball at third. Pena is not a great fielding shortstop. Jose Altuve is sneaky, a fucking terrible second baseman. Christian Walker is a very good first baseman. So they do have an infielder that knows what a glove feels like on their palm. So that's good. And then their catcher is Yiner Diaz, who again is a very bad defensive catcher. Wow, they're not going to play defense, and it doesn't look like they're going to bang the ball around. So, yeah, I don't know. And the pitching's not really there, to be honest. Ronald Blanco, I'm not counting on another season like that from him.
No. I'll tell you what, too. You look at – this has been a team that when you look at their pitching, their starting pitching, and look at all the injuries they've had in the last several seasons, that's not ending anytime soon. You have guys like Luis Garcia, Lance McCullers, Christian Javier, all – questionable for opening day. And in the case of Christian Javier, there's really no timetable for his return from Tommy John.
So he's not even listed on the depth chart.
No, because he's listed in inactive and injuries, and he is still recovering from TJ. So I look at that rotation that they have right now, and you can count on some solid seasons out of Framber Valdez, no doubt about it. I think Hunter Brown is promising. Ronel Blanco, we'll see if 2024 for him was kind of just like a lightning in a bottle season. Spencer Arrigetti, we don't know much about him yet, still developing. Hayden Wesneski, I personally like him, seen it a lot here in the north side of Chicago. I'm a big fan of Wesneski, but we'll see if he can kick it up a notch. This team has gone from, like, you look at the lineup and you go to the rotation, you go, damn. I'm looking at this lineup and rotation now and going, ugh. Like, it's just different.
Yeah. If there's a team that can squeeze more juice out of these pitchers, if there's a team that can get more out of this staff than they're projected for, it is, I will like to point out that it is definitely the Astros. Like, they can make, they're kind of like a Rays type place where it's like, oh, wow, this guy has like an above average sinker. Let's just make him throw it 85% of the time. And he just gives up significantly less runs that way. So, I mean, like I said, they can probably figure some stuff out. But like, what kind of season are you going to get out of Josh Hader? What kind of season are you going to get out of Brian Abreu? Both guys that genuinely are like so electric. They're maybe not Brian Abreu, but Josh Hader has been in, I think he's gotten Cy Young votes as a reliever. And like, Brian Abreu is the kind of guy who has stuff in that stratosphere of like, oh, wow, he's insanely good. But like, after that, it falls off a cliff. Taylor Scott, Caleb Ort, Brian King. It's just not great in the bullpen team that was prided on their bullpen very recently.
It's just, it's funny you bring up Hader because now I look at this lineup, I look at all things considered, and I'm thinking, Hader doesn't belong on this team. Like, no. Hader would be,
I think,
perfect.
He's gone in July.
That's a good point.
He's very expensive, money though. On that.
Also true. But if you're a team that is pushing for World Series come July and August, you're gonna pay for John Hader.
Yep. Yeah, no, I agree. So kind of regardless of what kind of season he's having, just because he's so different to hit against. Like, he gets,
of course,
like 0.5 ERA points from just being the like not sidewinding, but like that three quarter release lefty. If you just pitched, if you just hit against a dude who throws like 93 all game from the right side, and they bring in Josh Hader in the seventh and or eighth, and he's like throwing the type of stuff he does from the left side, you're going to have a hard time adjusting regardless. So I think that's value.
I want to share with you that Ben Gamel is actually in the same time period as Anthony Rendon, negative 0.1 WAR. So pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Damn, only five. Oh, wow. If you told me in 2019, Ben Gamel would be only five WAR behind Anthony Rendon, I'd have been like, damn, McCoy must be a hell of a ball player.
Here's a trivia question for you. I like to drop some trivia every so often when we're looking at this shit. But who in that 2020 to 2024 time frame had the lowest WAR?
The lowest?
The lowest.
Who? Did Tim Anderson suck for long enough? No, he hasn't played enough.
No. I'm not gonna. This person has had, in this time frame, he played 397 games, over 1,500 plate appearances.
His he played two seasons of ball?
Offensive war. Wait, that's not right. Oh, yeah, that is right. That is right. So his war. Wait.
Is the team going to give him away?
I don't know. At the Tigers? He's
Miggy just, sucked.
Who?
Miggy was bad.
He was bad, and he was the worst at negative two.
No way.
Sure was.
Makes sense. You're going to give him at bats. What are you going to do? Not let Miguel Cabrera hit?
I would like to tell someone. I would like to see someone tell him that he's not in the lineup or not hitting. Yeah, go for that.
Yeah. Yeah. If he's got a contract, he's in my lineup and he's batting third. Like,
well, no, let's not go crazy. All right. Let's relax.
Out of respect alone. Guy's got a bat above six.
Oh, God. Oh, shit. All right. So let's move on to Astro. We're going to talk about the division as a whole here when we get through all the teams, but as we do the round robin, but let's then move on to.
To where? Where are we moving? Is there a place, a geographical place you can assign to this team?
No. We are in no man's land. We are going to the Sacramento Athletics of Las Vegas. And we're going to talk about a team we love here on this show, the A's. And Parker, I just have a soft spot for these A's. And I'm going to tell you what, I was preparing for this show, going through all the Fangraph stats, going through like my rundown like I do every time, every week. And I looked at this lineup, and there's one thing that stood out to me when I looked at their projections for 2025. From 1 through 9 in their lineup, the projections for homers, home runs aren't everything, folks. I understand this. But their home run projections, two-thirds of their lineup, guys 1 through 6, are projected for at least 22 home runs or more. I don't care what team you play for, guys. If you have that many guys hitting 20 plus home runs on your roster, you're doing something right.
In a minor league ballpark?
Bingo.
That's pretty good. That's solid. So fun fact about the A's. They are projected for 2.2 runs scored per game. Via Zips. Get that via Zips because I'm a Fangraphs guy now. I don't know. I think I'm with you on this whole A's thing. Yeah, man. I got to get the freaking... There's too many ads on this damn site, though. I got to get the freaking subscription. That's how they get you. All right. But going kind of doing what I did before and looking at the depth chart. I mean, Shea Bangaliers here playing catcher. Tyler Soderstrom, Zach Gelof at second base. Jacob Wilson at shortstop. I like Gelof. Wilson will, I mean, Wilson will do Wilson things. None of them. Geloff's a very good defender, a pretty good defender, I should say. Shea Langeliers is a liability at the catcher position. Soderstrom's a okay defender, I guess. Shortstop, but Jacob Wilson, eh. That his value is definitely going to come from the bat. He's a very good hitter as it pertains to his WAR. Gio Urshela, some veteran leadership at the third base position. I like that. He'll probably get himself a good amount of DH time. They have the other Max Muncy also on this lineup. Fun fact. Seth Brown, JJ Bladede, baby, and Lawrence Butler.
You know what? I'll tell you what. If there's any player that I think could have a very exciting season and break out, to be fair, he kind of already broke out in the second half of 2024. But Lawrence Butler, man, is
Lawrence
exciting.
Butler's a big.
I am a big Butler fan already.
I love Lawrence Butler, and you know what's funny is he's going to be injured, and I don't know how permanent this injury is. I'll have to look into it. Estuary Ruiz is so fun to watch play the game of baseball. He is so fast. He's going to steal. If he's on base, man, he's stealing. So love Estuary Ruiz. He was sent down last year. It was that big like controversy where he was sent down, and like he had criticized the team, So I mean, we'll see how that turns out. I think he's a good ball player. I'm excited for him. But the guy, I mean, here's the guy. This is really him. The dude that everybody looks at when you say A's, who do you think of? And that's the guy who just got the extension in the offseason, man. And it's Brent Rooker. Brent Rooker is looking to be, he is a league average defender, but he can bang the ball around. A 258, 338, and 510 slash line that translates to a 848 OPS. These are projected numbers, but I mean, that's valuable wherever you play, especially for a team that needs veteran leadership, needs quality at bats, and can hit the ball out of the ballpark pretty frequently.
So here's my question for you. Let's talk about Brent Rooker for a second, because Brent Rooker, actually, what's interesting about him is last season, he hit the most home runs he's hit in a season. He's had the most RBIs he's had in a season, and coincidentally dropped his K rate. And all those things are connected. So my question for you is, how plausible is it that if he can keep the K rate down and he can make better contact with the ball, hard hit contact, in Sacramento, can he hit 45 home runs?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I probably should have thought about that a little harder, but I think I'm optimistic about Brent Rooker. I like him and think he's a good dude. Before he signed the extension, I was all about the Red Sox trying to trade for him. I wanted him in Fenway. I've been kind of beating the Brent Rooker drum for the last, I think last year we did episodes where I was like, I want Brent Rooker in Boston. So I love him. I think he's great. He's maybe one of the best baseball players to follow on Twitter. He's hilarious on Twitter. Cause like some reporter will be like, the A's are exploring options at, and he'll just be like, no, we're not. It's super funny. Definitely follow him on Twitter. But Brent Rooker, big fan. Hope he does really well. And I like an A's team that is performing well. I think it's a good story. It's one of those like, it's like Major League. It's like watching the movie Major League, but yeah,
it is. It is. I just do feel like, first off, I'm a vibes guy. I think we all know this at this point. And I can tell you what right now, there's nothing better in my mind than when you have a bunch of young guys who have no expectations, who are going to beat the odds in a situation where they left a storied franchise city, went to Sacramento, led by someone like Mark Kotze, who is notoriously one of the most beloved managers in baseball. And you have him leading this crew. I'm just telling you, don't sleep on the A's. And when I give you my standing predictions, I think y'all are going to be quite surprised. And I went a little homerish because I just think there's so much here than meets the eye with the A's. Truly.
We might have the same standings for the third.
Well, we always, goddamn it, we always do. I don't even know why. Like at this point, we might as well just like make one and switch off every week. Like there's no point.
Yep. Yep. Which is hilarious that, I mean, I think we just think about the game similarly, but that's funny. I think there's a lot to talk about from the pitching side of things. So we should probably do that about the Athletics, because they did give out the most lucrative contract in Athletics history to Luis Severino in the offseason for a whopping $73 million. I mean, he's projected for 177 innings. He has a 7.7 K per nine. He's good. He's a good ball player. He's projected for 4.3 ERA. In that ballpark, I think I agree with that number, but he was better than I think overall last year. Then we look at the rest of their rotation. It's looking like JP Spears, Jeffrey Springs, which I think might actually be their best pitching ad this past season.
Maybe.
Or offseason.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Springs could be poised for like, okay, this is super. I'm going to say this now because my bold prediction will not be this.
Okay.
Jeffrey Springs could literally make a run at a Cy Young. Like if it all works out. Jeffrey Springs continues on the trajectory that he was when he was in Tampa, and we see the pitchers have random incredible seasons, Jeffrey Springs is a very good pitcher. If it all works out, it may just crash and burn.
Here's my problem. My problem with Jeffrey Springs is statistical and anecdotal. Okay. The anecdotal part is me being a psychopath. That anytime the Rays get rid of someone, they're doing it for a reason because it's the goddamn Rays and they're good at that shit. Okay.
Yeah, you're not
wrong.
That's
one. Two, I look at Jeffrey Springs over the last several seasons. You look at how many innings he's pitched. Remember, this guy has been kind of a swing bullpen guy. 2024, he pitched 33 innings, 16 innings in 23 with an injury. The last time he pitched a good chunk of innings was one time, one season in his career. He pitched 135 innings in 2022. Every other season, he pitched relief innings. So that makes me nervous. I don't know that he's an exact shoe-in to give you 150 innings and pitch reliever stuff over the course of a full season.
Okay, very fair. Maybe not Cy Young. How about comeback player of the year?
look how quickly he just got demoted in the awards.
I'm just talking about the guy that posted a 763 ERA plus in 2023 in 16 innings pitched.
Hey, you know what? 16 innings, you're gonna kick ass in 16 innings. Do it like that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. But having said that, the tangibles are there. The peripherals are there. It's literally going to be getting him out there for 130 plus innings. That's what it's going to come down to. I think if that happens, then maybe it is closer to what you're saying.
I mean, when he did pitch those 135 innings, it was a 149 ERA plus. He came out firing in 2023. His elbow fell off. And in 2024, we're only looking at, you know, like you said, 33 innings. They want him to be a starter. They signed him to be a starter. So I think the innings, if he just stays healthy, I think that they're going to come. Know.
Yeah, I think so. And I sure hope so. You know, I think the A's definitely are taking a little bit of a risk there, but they're in a position where, honestly, they can. And I think that was a good gamble on someone like Springs. So.
For sure. There's not much else to talk about from the starting side of the pitching department, but we do have to talk about the most electrifying reliever in baseball.
Yeah, and Parker, I'll tell you what, when I think of Mason Miller, there's no doubt that he is someone to watch in 2025 for a few reasons. Is 2024 was really his breakout, we learned about Mason Miller in 2024. I mean, this is a guy who had a 41.8% K percentage. Holy hell, okay? And he had a fielding independent pitching of 218, which is pretty outrageous. Now, here's my question for him. My question for him is, was that a lightning in a bottle scenario? Can he hold it? Is his velocity and his delivery going to mean that he is going to face an injury season in 2025? I hate to say that, but it's always something you think about with these high kind of these flamethrowers that we get here in the bullpen. So I don't know. Like, if he performs well this year, did the A's cash in and actually trade him at the deadline? Like, that's a very real possibility.
They could get they really could have done it last year, but they could get a haul for a healthy Mason Miller.
Correct.
I know we are deep in the throes of winter for those of us who are not at spring training. It is February for a lot of us. It is the coldest month of the year. Just in case you ever like have problems with your heating in your house, maybe you ran out of propane in your tank, whatever. My advice to you is to go to Mason Miller's Baseball Savant page. That shit will keep you warm at night. Holy cow. There is a lot of red on this Baseball Savant page. I'm just going to list off the categories in which he has the 100th percentile. XERA, X batting average, fastball velo, whiff percentage, and K percentage. Oh, and he's 99th percentile chase percentage, and he's 96th percentile in average exit velocity. This guy is a beast.
It's unreal, and this is what gets me so excited, because all of that tells you that if they can keep him healthy and he stays durable, we are looking at the second coming of a Josh Hader, a Devin Williams with more heat. Guy is going to be the next big closer in baseball. And you're right. If they can capitalize on his health, they can get a haul right now. And as much as I'm sure they love having Mason Miller, it's one guy on a team of 26. If you can get three or four prospects for Mason Miller, give me that all day.
Mason Miller is what the Angels thought they were drafting in Ben Joyce. Like, huge righty, throws 103 plus, wipeout sweeper. He's a very good pitcher. I mean, he's a two-pitch pitcher. He is a insanely good fastball and a very, very good slider. And he doesn't really need anything else than that. He threw the changeup 2% of the time last season.
My goodness. I mean, that just tells you, a bunch of these pitchers that need a 1-2 pitch to play off of. And he's all like, no, I'm just going to give you the shit down. I'm going to give you the fastball each and every time, and you're not going to be able to hit this damn thing.
Yeah, I mistakenly called it a sweeper. It is not a sweeper. It is a straight up bullet slider that just kind of like drops down right at the end of the pitch. It's very good.
Goodness gracious. Let's get moving here, because we're already 50 minutes in, because this division's so fun. So let's go over and talk about the Mariners. And you know what, Parker? Like, I want the Mariners to be good so bad. And
I think everybody does, right? Shout out to our friend Carl.
Boom. Yeah, Carl, we love that you listen. We know you're a big Mariners guy, but here's the problem with the Mariners. Now we're about to shit on them a little bit. Sorry, Carl.
A little bit.
The Mariners, if they just invested a little bit in their offense, their pitching, combined with their pitching, it could be an unstoppable team, but for some reason they're really having trouble building that offense, and I would love to know why. I just want to know why.
They have maybe the best offensive catcher one of the best catchers, period, in baseball. I mean, when we look at Cal Raleigh, he is he is a better defensive catcher than he is an offensive catcher. He is a spectacular offensive catcher. So you have a winner on your hands when it comes to Cal Raleigh. But then you look at everybody else, and like Luke Raley is projected for the most plate appearances at first base. Dylan Moore is projected for their second base. J.P. Crawford. J.P. Crawford's what, 75 years old now? Somewhere around there.
A spry 30.
Yeah, yeah. And we're looking at Jorge Polanco, who's hurt, so probably Donovan Solano in those off days at third base. Randy Rosarena.
Hey, don't shit on Donovan Solano. He's got more war since 2020 than Andrew Rendon. Or Anthony Rendon. Why did I say Andrew Rendon?
Oh boy. Can you tell me if Mitch Haniger does?
Mitch Haniger. Ooh.
He's got to.
Haniger. Let's see. I'm sure he does. He does not, actually. He has a 1.9. Bummer.
Oh man. Hold on. I was gonna look and see if Master Boney did too.
Let's go back to that lineup though, because your points are good ones. Here's where I get concerned is I get concerned because there was so many options, and in my opinion there was a lot of options this season affordably. Like, I don't know why they couldn't have not went out and got a Christian Walker and been aggressive with paying him. I'm not sure why they have not already scooped up someone like you've mentioned, a Justin Turner. Like, there are things on the margins that we're not no one's asking the Mariners to go out and land a Juan Soto. It would be nice, but no one's requiring that. What we're requiring is that you fortify the weakest spots in your offense to support what is potentially, sans the Dodgers, the best rotation in baseball. Like, capitalize on this rotation, and you can still do that by upgrading a Luke Rayleigh, a Mitch Haniger, a Dylan Moore. I just don't understand the hesitancy and the failure to do so.
The Mariners have a pretty good outfield. And when you consider it's Randy Arozarena, Julio Rodriguez, and then some combination of Victor Robles, Mitch Haniger, and Luke Rayleigh in right field. That's encouraging, you know, like that's a solid outfield offensively, at least if J-Rod does J-Rod things.
Well, J-Rod's got to do J-Rod things, but I am interested to see what Randy Arozarena does in his first full season with the Mariners. Remember, he was traded at the deadline last year. So I would love to see him get into spring training, get comfortable, because he's one of the most exciting players in baseball. He's had a couple down years, but don't sleep on him popping off with 25, 30 homers. I mean, he can't.
Okay. So maybe it does happen. I don't know, man. Like, we hope in Jorge Polanco breaks out. Like, what's the plan here? I mean, JP Crawford's gonna hit, but it's not like you need like 30 to 40 home run pop in this lineup, man. You need like someone to back up Luke Rayleigh, or for someone that Luke Rayleigh can protect in the lineup. Like, you need one of those to really and truly take a step as an organization, because like you said, and we're about to get into it, this pitching is astounding. It is so good. Their rotation is five guys that could be twos or better on most other teams. Logan Gilbert, Luis Castillo, George Kirby, Bryce Miller, Brian Wu. Holy cow! Like, every single one of those guys is projected to have a K per nine above eight. That's so good.
See, here's the thing, and I'll frame this another way. Let's say they had above average offense in 2025. They find themselves in a playoff series. If you're throwing out Gilbert, Castillo, and Kirby in a playoff series, like, just get the ticket and get in the dance at that point. Like, just come on.
They have easily the best playoff rotation. Well, the Dodgers in the AL. Yeah. How about this? In the AL.
There you go.
Yeah. I love their starting rotation. I will watch, man. So being a West Coast guy, living on the West Coast at least, I find myself with the Red Sox game over by like 7 o'clock at night for me. Most nights during baseball season. And oftentimes I turn on the Mariners game because it's outside of my direct TV like blackout area, so I can typically watch their games. But it's always a good starting pitcher. It's always somebody that you're like, ooh, this could be a good one. And then the lineup doesn't hit anything and they lose 4-3.
Yeah, well, I will just kind of tease here that I do have a pretty significant bold prediction for the Mariners. So we're going to revisit them here in a little bit. And I'm sure it's going to spark some conversation. So we'll hold off on that. We are going to wrap up our kind of round robin here for this division with the Rangers. And Parker, with the Rangers, you know, obviously we know they won the World Series in 2023. Shout out to our friend Adam that still talks about that.
Love you, Adam.
But we love you, buddy. But since then, their offense is kind of fallen off a cliff. They've regressed. 2024 was not a strong season for them. They finished third with only 78 wins, 10 and a half games behind the Astros for the division. Can they have a comeback season here in 2025?
Yes. In short, yes, I think they can. When you look at a lineup that has guys like basically everybody on this lineup can bang the ball around, their rotation is nothing to shake a stick at either, especially if Jacob DeGrom's elbow is actually in one piece, especially in that case, I think that they have a very compelling case to do very well. And then I think their biggest addition, I think the biggest addition of the offseason happened in the bullpen, and I'll explain why in a little bit. But yeah, no, I'm optimistic for these Rangers for sure.
I am too, Parker. I think for two reasons. Number one is I do think last season was definitely a down blip potentially for this team. Yeah. I think you said it right. I think there's just too much hitting talent here on this team up and down this lineup for it to really happen again. I think when you talk about, when you talk about just sheer probabilities and variance in performance, I think that everyone had a down year at the same time, unfortunately, or close to everybody. And then yeah. You had a guy like Jock Peterson off the left side in the middle of that lineup. That really is great. I think if you're, putting someone like him behind a Wyatt Langford or a Corey Seager, that's compelling to me. But there is the Jacob DeGrom factor that you mentioned, and I'm going to throw another little trivia question your way, 'cause I think this is kind of tells the tale here. When is the last time that Jacob DeGrom has pitched over 100 innings in a season?
2019?
Good. Very good. Yes, 2019, he pitched 204 innings, and since then, he has not eclipsed 92.
Yeah.
Is this the year that we finally see Jacob DeGrom give us a full season? Because if so, Parker, sky's the limit for this team, I feel.
Well, answer that's no. So, not to I would love it, man. As a guy who loves, I fucking love watching Jacob DeGrom pitch. I'll go back and watch his highlights, but that's part of the reason why I knew it was 2019, because I've watched a bunch of Jacob DeGrom 2019 highlights. Like, he's so electric when he's finally on the mound. He's projected for 4 WAR this season, and I just don't know who's working at Zips. I guess you don't project injuries like you project on a 162 game basis, but like my projection is like 0.6 WAR and like 7 starts.
Oh, I hope that's not true, but you got to go with what you know, right? Unless until you are proven otherwise, I understand why people think that. But here's why I get concerned is I don't know that this is the best rotation that the Rangers could have put together for this season. And I think once you potentially talk about DeGrom again, falling off of this rotation, you're looking at Eovaldi, Gray, Tyler Mahle, and then some guy, Cody Bradford. Like, their depth beyond that is Dane Dunning, hoping that maybe Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter do something, like, I just don't know.
I think that's why they were handcuffed. That's my personal opinion on this. You bring back Nathan Eovaldi because as much as it pains me to say as a Red Sox fan, the guy's like born to be a Texas Ranger. He's amazing in the Rangers uniform. He's from the area. He's from freaking Alvin, Texas, which is where Nolan Ryan is from, which you can go ahead and hit that on your bingo card. Got that knocked out in spring training. You'll hear that 10 more times during the season. Actually, you'll hear it however many starts he makes. You'll hear it 3 times during each start. So Nathan Eovaldi is the front man. He's going to make the opening day start for this rotation. But then you got guys like, we talked about Jacob DeGrom. Tyler Mahle, I think you can't abandon ship on him. I think you have to let him make starts, man. I think you're kind of handcuffed and you're letting him play games. John Gray is good. Like, John Gray's fine for your 4 spot? Absolutely, your 4 spot. Go ahead and throw it out there. And then here's why they're handcuffed and why you don't sign another arm. Because they could have been in on a guy like Nick Pivetta, but they weren't. True. Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter, God, remember their days at Vanderbilt, man? Like, those guys are good.
Parker, they looked like in Vanderbilt days, like Paul Skeen level prospects. Like, I was convinced
that Jack Leiter, like, because Jack Leiter was a college guy, and this is the same draft where Marcelo Meyer was drafted. This is the same draft where Max Clark went. Would he go number 1 overall? I don't remember, but like it was a good draft class, man.
This was a heavy
draft class. And it was like so deep that I didn't know if the Red Sox were going to maybe have a shot at Jack Leiter. And I was like, oh my God, this is the slam dunk pick. If you have a shot at him, didn't end up getting that shot. 'Cause I think they had the 4th pick in the draft that year, but still Jack, like you said, Jack Leiter looked like a Paul Skeens, and Kumar Rocker was not far behind him. He looked like a CC Sabathia type prospect, I think, in my opinion. And neither of them really worked out. Kumar Rocker had injury problems, ended up on the same roster as Leiter, so maybe those guys can get in the lab together or something. But like, it just kind of didn't work out last year for Leiter. But he is projected for a 9.1 K per nine, and that's ace stuff, man. Like, that's number one in the rotation stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's a very interesting scenario where if they start working closely with Rocker and Leiter, that's your 4-5 sometime this season. And if you're getting just serviceable stuff from them, man, this looks a lot different. The picture just looks a lot different. And I do, as you say it, kind of do wonder if they're banking on that. And maybe they are. And I don't know, with a starting three like Evaldi, DeGrom, and Gray, I think that's a safe bet. I could see why they're leaning into that a little bit if that's the case.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think so too. Interestingly enough, I can't get Jacob DeGrom to pull up on this war chart. I guess there were only 326 qualified people. Why is Jacob DeGrom not on here? Oh, hitters. It's hitters. Duh. That's why. I'm going to go find him on the pitchers one, because I want to know. Make your prediction now. Who do you think has more war? Between Jacob DeGrom and Anthony Rendon.
Ooh.
Since 2020.
I would say Jacob DeGrom.
I can't get him to pull up.
Jacob DeGrom, I would think, has definitely more war than Anthony Rendon. Since
he's not pulling up on the pitcher leading board. Do I have it set to infinity? I do. Yeah, he's not on here. I don't know.
Let me see if I can find
him. Is that 2020? Did it change the years on me? No.
Well, you know what? He may not be. Do you have him on qualified?
He might not have been qualified. Yeah, oh yeah, minimum playing time qualified. Minimum playing time 0. Let's see. This is gonna crash Fangraphs. Okay, here we go. DeGrom. Yeah. Still not coming.
I don't think he is. Gonna find it.
What do you think? Who do you think?
I'd still think DeGrom had more war.
Yeah, he has double the war, 11.6.
That is insane. Come on.
That's also due to the fact that Jacob DeGrom is like lights out every time he touches the mound, even if he's about to get injured.
I don't know if it's a credit to DeGrom doing more or Rendon doing just shit less. I don't know. This turned into the shitting on Anthony Rendon.
In 47 games. In 47 starts since 2020, DeGrom has 11.6 F war. Wow.
That's insane. I
think this might be a thing that we keep going. This is my new bit. I'm going to start congratulating players when they pass the Rendon line of war.
Wow, this turned into a whole different podcast than I thought this was going to turn into. all right, let's do this, Parker. So we've gone through each of these teams for the AL West,
yeah.
And I think we have solidified our initial argument that this division could swing one way or the other based on things happening the right way for these teams, and the chances of this going haywire are pretty high. So why don't you lay out for me, if you had to predict these standings for 2025, how is this division going to fall in your eyes?
Okay, I have Rangers, Mariners, Athletics, Astros, Angels.
You son of a bitch. Like, are we, like, seriously, I'm going to, like, do it opposite of what I initially think just to have it different from you one damn time. One time.
He's like, yeah, and when in the AL East, I got the Toronto Blue Jays.
The Salt Lake City Bees.
Okay, that is something that's kind of cool. We are 20-for-20 on same rankings for these division predictions.
That is pretty cool and so disturbing that we have the same baseball mind. So I agree with you. And so here's what I'll say with this. I'm going to start going into some of my bold predictions because they inform why I also chose the rankings I did, the standings I did. My first bold prediction, I think the Astros are going to decrease their 2024 win total by 10 games. I think they're going to go 78-84. And here's why, Parker. Think about 10 games. Couple games a month is not unheard of when you lose a couple of your big boppers. You don't have a steady rotation. That is completely plausible. Completely.
Absolutely. The Astros have the unique opportunity to... They had, the unique opportunity to fade gracefully into the sunset after a very dominant stretch of baseball. They're choosing to crawl and scratch and claw and try to remain relevant when in reality, just pull up their depth chart. It is not looking good. And it's going to be to their detriment. They decided to not, I mean, they traded away Kyle Tucker, but they decided not to trade away a Bregman. They consistently have chosen Jose Altuve over every other player on that roster. Nobody is more angry than Yordan Alvarez is at his agent because he got signed to like the cheapest deal of all the power hitters in baseball. I agree with you. I think the Astros are just going to continue to die and die slowly. They are projected for 84 wins by Zips, which is actually the same total that they projected the Mariners for. But I don't know, man. I don't know.
Can I also throw this out here? And I kind of just thought about this now as you were talking about how this team is structured. This is why if I am an Astros fan, I'm getting concerned. Because they have one of, if not the worst, farm system in baseball. Now, if you pair that with their current roster, who on this roster are you trading for prospects? Who?
Nobody.
Yordan Alvarez? Maybe.
Chaz?
Chaz. Yeah, for Anthony Rendon.
You know, but... really, it might be if Goldschmidt, not Goldschmidt, Christian Walker has a good season, trade him at the deadline, probably rake in a couple prospects. Yiner. But Yiner's an okay catcher offensively.
Sure, but even then, like, you're proving my point. Like, after Yordan and maybe Christian Walker, like, you can't even do a rebuild strip down like you usually would. Like, this, they have a real risk, and this is really sad, but it's true. They have the risk of going into a rebuild that is going to take many, many, many years.
This could be a decade-long thing.
That sucks. That really sucks.
Now, what can we attribute their farm system to? And you've pointed this out before, but I'll let you hit it again. Why can we attribute the fact that they have such a terrible farm system?
So the Astros, with their sign-stealing scandal, they lost a couple years of first-round picks. And if you remember, folks, their history of first-round picks is quite good. Quite good. I'm going to pull it up right now so I don't misspeak. So Astros first-round picks. List of Houston Astros first-round picks. This is going to be pretty good. So if you go back to their first round picks, 2022, Drew Gilbert, top prospect. 2015, Alex Bregman. 2015, they had, looks like, two first round picks. So they had Bregman and they had Kyle Tucker. 2016, Forrest Whitley. After that, it's been little hit or miss. But 2020 and 2021, strong draft classes. They didn't have a first round pick.
Correa was the first overall pick in baseball.
True. That's right. So it goes to show that people always said, like, oh, you know, the Astros did this sign stealing scandal, and you know, they got off
scot free.
Guys, I'm here to tell you, they really didn't. And those two picks. Don't underthink how much that has impacted their ability to sustain this thing for many years more.
I agree, and I think that this is also a huge testament to the fact that people say that the MLB draft doesn't matter. I think it does. It does in a big way, especially back. There's a reason we had like 60 rounds in the damn draft, because you have to fill a bunch of rosters full of players, and any one of them could hit.
And I kind of I'm kind of annoyed that people would say it wouldn't matter, especially now, because guess what? It's only going to matter more when you have teams aggressively calling up a guy like a Paul Skeens. Like, that's only going to happen more.
And with the prominence and the rise of college baseball, which, by the way, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably going to get it and listen to it Thursday morning, which means tomorrow, Friday, February 14th, is NCAA Division I college baseball opening day. Go, if you don't have ESPN Plus, that's how you watch 90% of those games. It's a pretty cheap. If you have the Disney bundle, just watch it. It's good baseball. It's fun baseball. And with the rise in the prominence of the prospects and the talent coming out of college baseball and teams being more willing to draft those guys rather than taking a lottery ticket high school player that you don't know if they're going to work out, we're going to see guys spending much less time in the minor leagues and coming up and starting to rake a lot sooner. And I think that as that prospect pipeline gets shorter, the intrigue around the MLB draft is going to be a lot bigger. And it's during All-Star weekend now, so it's even more high profile. And I think if there's one thing that Rob Manfred has done, because I truly believe he's maybe the most influential commissioner in MLB history.
No matter what you think about him, absolutely.
Yeah, with the rule changes and stuff. But I think one of the bigger positives that he's done, it has found a way to market stuff that baseball fans and baseball executives probably prior to him considered unmarketable. Things like the draft and prospects and stuff like that. So
that's interesting. It's a good point. I mean, yeah, it's a huge part of the sport, and that's not going away anytime soon. Parker, why don't you give me your first bold prediction for the AL West?
So my first bold prediction for the AL West, it doesn't quite line up with my standings projection, but I think that the Athletics are going to win. But I'll say over. I'm second guessing myself. Fuck it, it's a bold prediction. Oakland Athletics 85 games. Oakland Athletics 85 games.
That is a capital bold. Are you?
That is only 9 more wins than they are currently projected by Zips. And to your point, you collect a couple wins per month.
Sure. Okay. Talked me into that. You did. All right. So you said 85, right?
85.
All right.
Which would put them in. I also think the Mariners overperform projections, and I think that putting every single division winner that isn't like the Braves at 85 wins or something like that for by Zips is like super conservative. So I think the Rangers win like 91 and the Mariners like 87 and then Athletics 85.
I think you're right, because if you look at this division last year, I mean, guys, the Astros won this division winning only 88 games. So let's start there. Two, Fangraphs has a projection for the AL West, and the Athletics, they project at 76 wins. So for them to get 9 more wins out of that from what you're saying, I wouldn't rule it out. But Parker, can you imagine that? If they get 85 wins, they're going to be the darlings of 2025. It will be such a good story.
It will. Everybody just is going to want to talk about the Athletics. And I just want to follow up and say that I think if you ask where those wins are going to come from, I think the Astros are going to be significantly worse than their projected 84 wins. And I think the Angels are going to be 65 win territory. Like, I think the wheels fall off this Angels team in the first month of the season.
That's a really good point, which leaves, you know, the Rangers, Mariners, and Athletes. The Athletes are going to get a hell of a lot more wins because the Angels and Astros just aren't going to be in it. I love that. That's a good point.
So real quick before we move on, I want to say the Athletics have broached, or at least it's been whispered around, that they are exploring the idea of maybe changing the name, which I think would be a tragedy if they change the name when they move to Vegas. Now, the Vegas Aces are already a WNBA team, and I think that's just such a good name. It would be genuinely the cool pivot from A's to Aces. But picture this: the Las Vegas Jacks, and you play off of the card. And you also play off of hitting jacks.
I kind of love that. Yeah. I mean, I mean, that's pretty awesome. It's a lot better than my idea, which was the Las Vegas Barry Manilows. But I like your idea. I love that. That's a lot better. That would be amazing.
There's color too many scheme. A teams in this division anyway. Angels, Athletics, Astros. Yeah.
What's your color scheme then?
I don't know. You got to play off the card. So black and red, black and black on black, black and white.
Dude, I'm telling you right now, if that were to happen and the color scheme was black, red, and white, which is my favorite color scheme of all time, I may just become an LA, a Las Vegas Jacks fan. I may.
Yeah, there you go. We've got to find players that like play into that, like with their names. So I already pulled off. Now I'm trying to make this convincing in my head. Who
definitely,
do they have?
Definitely Jack Leiter.
Jack, yeah. You got to get Jack Leiter on that team. What about like, I guess there's nobody else who has like a card kind of name. No, but still, that'd be fun.
Man, I love that. I love that. I'm going to be thinking about that all week. All right, let's go to my next bold prediction. I have three in total. This is my number two. I want to hop over to the Rangers. I do think that Wyatt Langford is going to be the best hitter on that team in 2025. Hmm. I think he's going to hit at least 275 and hit at least 30 homers for the Rangers in 25.
Yeah, that's good. I could definitely see. I don't even know if that's bold, man. I think you're right. We're ready for the Wyatt Langford breakout, right? Like,
hell, I'm talking like a Jackson Merrill season.
Yes. And isn't he another Nolan Shanuel who like didn't play in the minors?
I think he did, but it was very,
very brief. Like it was like the draft year he played like a month and then was on the big league club the next year.
I think you're right. Yes.
Yeah. That'd be so cool. What is he? 22? I mean, he's a college kid.
Yeah. So let's see where he's at right now. I think he's only like 21 or 22. That sounds about right. He is. Oh, wow. He's actually 23. That's older than I thought.
Huh? Yeah. Fucking old bitch. I love you, Wyatt Langford. I'm sorry.
He's projected at 23 homers. He's projected at a 267 average and a 460 slugging for 25. And I think he can easily top all of that.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. That's pretty good. I don't know if I have a second bold prediction, if I'm being honest. I think the A's are going to stink. That's not bold.
The Angels, you mean?
Actually, I thought about using this one and I decided not to, but this is the perfect episode for me to do it. I think Anthony Rendon's retired. I don't know if he comes back.
I think you're 100% right. Between all the bullshit about him not loving baseball, not into it, to this season ending injury, I know one thing's not going to happen. He will not play another game in an Angels uniform. That I know for sure.
He's got one more season on this contract besides this one.
After this one, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think that's very plausible. I think with all the shit surrounding him, why would he want to?
No, he's making his money. Yeah.
Yeah.
He talked about how all he wants to do is raise his family, which is so respectable.
That's fine, dude.
To do that after griming your way out of a deal for a fan base that needed this hope. I don't know.
I don't know.
The baseball purist in me hates it.
True. I will say this. I blame the Angels as equally as I blame Anthony Rendon because he was the product of, again, poor allocation of resources, and that franchise have always struggled with that. They should never have signed him to that deal. It was outrageous.
They do it all the time. They do it all the time, for sure. We're at an hour and 22.
Holy crap. Okay, let me throw out my last bold prediction. This one's a good one. This one I saved for last because I believe strongly in this. The Mariners are going to say enough is enough, Parker. They're going to get to the trade deadline. They're going to be so close to first place in this division because of their pitching, and they're like, F it. We're trading some pitching. We're getting two bats. Let's take this thing home. I think they're finally going to get there, and they're not going to have a choice.
What if they trade for Vladdy?
Can I up that ante?
Okay.
What about not only Vladdy, what if the Cubs can't reach an extension with Kyle Tucker,
ooh,
and
they go get Kyle Tucker. I could see Kyle Tucker just playing in Seattle, man.
I know.
Wow.
I think this is the year. I think this is the year that Jerry DePoto needs to have a good long look in the mirror, and he needs to go suck it up, be a big boy, invest in some bats, and let's get this thing cooking.
Yeah, you got to kind of extend Kyle Tucker in the next like 2 weeks, though. I don't think once the season starts, he's going to want to hear about it.
No, and quite frankly, I think the Cubs are kind of trapped because he's a Boris client. That means 99% chance.
Wait, Kyle Tucker's a Boris client?
Pretty sure.
I don't think he is, if I'm being honest.
He isn't?
No.
I'm pretty sure. Oh, no, you're right.
Excel Sports Management.
Mm-hmm. My bad. Good.
I only know that because of the extra innings that I did on Kyle Tucker when the Kyle Tucker trade. Go check that out on our YouTube channel. It's pretty good.
Yes.
But that's the only reason I know that.
Good catch. So, yes, I do think regardless of the fact of course Boris Klein is an agent or not, I do think he's going to test the market because he's going to get over $400, $450 million on a deal. And if he does that and he tells the Cubs this spring, hey, not signing with you guys, and they're not like actually tearing it up in the NL Central, I'd trade them.
Yeah. Man, that's a good one. That'd be so fun. Can you imagine?
That would be really so fun.
Randy Arozarena, Kyle Tucker, J-Rod. That'd be a good outfield.
We would have the most fun trade deadline. That would be so fun.
The Mariners would instantly become like ALCS level contenders.
Oh my goodness, I love that thought.
Depending on how bad the rest of the lineup is.
fair enough. All right, Parker, we have talked the shit out of the AL West. I don't think we could do it anymore.
This is the longest episode we've done by far, but I love it.
This is definitely the longest, but we always love doing it. We're here every week, folks, talking baseball. Next week, we are moving to my home base, the AL Central, so we'll have a lot to talk about there. Make sure, please, 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 we appreciate that you listen to us. The best thing you can do is hop over to YouTube, subscribe to the channel, like the videos, catch our shorts, and get really involved in what we're doing here at Late Night Baseball. But until then...